This is The Brilliant, episode probably around 47. And I'm talking to my friend Kalen, who actually I don't know that well, from New York City.
Hey.
Hello, welcome.
I was going to go over to Woodbine tonight, but here I am instead.
I've heard rumors that they're having some difficulties or some changes or something.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I haven't been over there for a little while, actually. I couldn't speak to that.
Interesting. So, just to start out with, and for those people who don't know who you are, you do a variety of high-profile performative actions that have included some videotaped beatings by or at least draggings by transit cops in the New York City subways. And then in the past couple months since the Trump election, you've actually gone to Times Square and been beaten by people with pool noodles or some crazy ass thing?
Oh, no, that was before. So there was a time leading up to the election where I was like, oh, it would be a total, like, not like even it would be a great idea, but I was like, oh, no one is doing this. Like, I should do this. And it was sort of inspired by that article in some British tabloid about people time travelers coming back from the future to kill Donald Trump, that they had come from the future to do this, and yeah. They were showing up in droves all over the place, and a friend and I sort of realized, like, oh, it would be so medieval and wonderful to dress up like Donald Trump and get beat up and I was making just making a living, like making rent, doing that for a few months. And there was one of the best scenes was, God, this is sort of an ornate story actually, and I sort of deride that project at this point, but there was this amazing moment when I was dressed up like Donald Trump and I was playing like Necro or something really loud, walking through Times Square with a big sign that says "Beat up Trump, $5, punch in the face or punch in the gut, $5, $300 to pee on me," and there were all these sort of menus of things, and I got these. I don't know if you know, in Times Square there are all these people who are mostly like Latino people. Who are dressed up like sort of like characters,
like Elmo and
characters, and there's a lot of Elmos, and they have this whole like, there's this whole like, suddenly in the last year they've been confined to zoos, these little like green zoos on the on the pavement there, as a result of like this crazy like thing where allegedly one of them was like sexually grabbing some kid or something, and so now there's this whole like, and they were being very aggressive with asking for photos, but I at one point got three Elmos to beat the shit out of Donald Trump with pool noodles.
Wow.
which was amazing, and that footage is somewhere, but yeah, for some reason I guess that project touched a nerve in it. I got on all these like news channels in like 13 different countries. I was in, there was a program in Bengali and a program in Russian and all these different, it was weird. I actually was like, that, this is bullshit. This is stupid. This is not art. I'm just doing this for money.
Yeah. I mean, like when you say that you made a living for a few months, like, are we talking like $1,000 a month or like multiple?
I wasn't going that hard. I mean,
okay.
I think that, I mean, I live very frugally and I don't
so
know.
So it's a couple $100 a month.
I live inside like usually like probably less than $500 a month, but I was making enough money to survive. And that was just, I thought it would be a real cash cow, but I didn't, I mean, it could have been, I think it could have been if I'd really gone hard, but I also felt mixed about it. And at this point sort of, yeah. I definitely take my responsibility for getting him elected with the whole media. I don't know. I was a part of that, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess the challenge here and you know, part of the reason why I wanted to talk to you in the context of a podcast was to talk about publicity and talk about, you know, how one plays the media and gets played by the media, which obviously you've done plenty of both. And so this was an example of you thinking about the moment and responding, you know, in a sort of funny way, and it, you know, like someone could read what you were doing as you being a grumpy Democrat, or they could have read what it is that you were doing in a more subversive way.
Right. Yeah. I've done some writing about it, and I think, I mean, there's several ways to read the project. I like to make things fairly open discursively, but I think one of the most interesting things actually that it seemed like the people. The more sort of liberal lefty people's politics were, the more like pathetically gentle they would be when they hit Trump with a pool noodle. Yeah, so I thought that was kind of telling, but...
Did you get hurt by anybody?
Not really. I mean, I was definitely winded a couple times. There's some video. I think there's a video on YouTube I could link if you want that I put together. It was touring some festivals in, like, Europe, I think. There was some footage of a guy who really, like, put it into me a couple times, and that was fine with me. I used to organize fight clubs, too, and I feel like there is some value. In Spanish, you say chocar, like this kind of like impact sort of thing. We have sort of dainty experiences of the world often, and it can be nice to have sort of...
What's the main URL someone can go to find your writing and information about what you do?
Well, my website is enormousface.com, and you can find stuff on there. Most things are linked on there. My old blog is... I transferred hosts, and my old blog collapsed, and so I've got a new one, and I'm trying to get everything up on it. But you can find the old blog through the Wayback Machine still.
So the main thing that you're known for, at least, you know, when I first heard of you outside of actually seeing you at the Seattle Anarchist Book Fair, the main thing that you're known for is you do these basically transit performances, so like subway performances, and you were arrested in a couple different high profile incidences, and at least one of those lawsuits is resolved. Is that true?
No, that I actually just filed the appeal, so I'm actually, they resolved it, and I'm appealing the lawsuit. That it came down and said that, because I describe it as an anarchist nihilist philosophy puppet show on the subway. Okay. It's sort of this, like, and I've done it all over the Americas and all over the sort of Western Europe, but there's part of it where I draw a little circle in chalk on the ground sometimes, and they said I was graffitiing the subway, but this is sort of a last thing, so I'm appealing their decision now, but we'll see. Yeah, I've been arrested a lot of times, and at the risk of sounding glib, I don't want to, like, fetishize that. I don't think that's worth... I don't know, being arrested sucks, but I do think that it's a really good crash course in institutionalized racism. If any white people out there, like, want a good, real quick understanding of white supremacy and how it works in the institutions, like, get arrested and you'll learn a lot.
So again, just to paint a picture, because you've made some choices that are rather severe and probably, like, more dramatic than people might give anything credit for. You tend to mostly be performing puppet shows with found objects, and you tend to wear an outfit that can be described somewhere between, like, sprockets, which, if people remember the Saturday Night Live, this was sort of making fun of German modern art, but it's so it's somewhere between sprockets and dumpster trash. So most of the time I've seen you, you've had some sort of, like, foam material strapped to your head, and so it's very alien, and your body type is very angular and sort of spidery, and so when people experience your puppet show, I mean just to be as gentle as possible, it's undecipherable. It doesn't make any sense at all.
Yeah, I think. Yeah, I mean, I think that's something that I have a bachelor's degree in comparative literature, and I'm sort of obsessed with, like, literary theory, and, like, I used to say I do sort of a Deleuzian puppet show, and I think mm-hmm. Deleuze and Derrida, you know, are very interesting to me, and I used to say that I just try to be very semiotically open, but it is true that I think, for better or for worse, although I tend not to incorporate very much narrative or text into my sort of performances or work or whatever, not happenings. Like, I often call it not happenings, but I think people can sort of see people are remarkably astute at deciphering my politics through that. Although I mostly use these sort of garbage things and talk about abjection and sort of. And this, I've been doing sort of a series of the theory of garbage recently, that's sort of asserting about how in an economy of goods and bads, garbage is essential to the construction of our of Western capitalist
plutocracy, right, where certain things are valued less. But it's, you know, one thing that you've been talking about recently has been lifestyleism. I heard you mention, maybe this isn't an old podcast I was listening to you, and it's interesting to sort of notice that, I think I would criticize myself for being sort of a lifestylist, only doing lots of garbage stuff and squatting. But it's interesting how that discourse has kind of gone by the wayside recently. I remember that was a big deal.
10 plus years ago. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've described that to people recently, been like, yeah, there used to be this thing in anarchist discourse.
Well, I don't want to get trapped by the, you know, obviously someone who watches you can get really seduced by the minutiae of like how it is that you do the mechanics of what you do.
Sure.
The only question along that lines that I will ask is, I imagine your immune system is very strong.
Oh yeah, it's through the roof.
You roll around the New York City subway all the time.
Yeah, I definitely expose myself to a lot of stuff. I think unless I miss like four nights of sleep in a row, I basically never get sick.
Yeah, that's amazing. I wonder how that will change as you age. I mean, is this something that you feel like has a limited lifespan because you've been doing it for 5 years or even more, right?
Yeah, longer than that. I think maybe 8 years at this point, longer. It is interesting to watch this change. I actually set myself a time bomb for when I was going to, and I actually already have sort of stopped doing that as my main thing.
Ah, okay.
And so I'm doing a lot of other things now. I sort of realized that it had become a sort of monolithic economy. And in terms of that's sort of one analysis I have, is that it's really important that we need to have all kinds of our economy sort of come from diverse inputs. Not just have one thing we depend on for everything.
Well, one of the things I've loved about your project from the onset is that you were fully committed to it, in the sense that it was a primary, for lack of a better language, job that you were doing.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I definitely still, you know, it's, I don't know. I mean, there's lots of ways to cut this, but one of the things I think I dogmatically cleave to is like, you can do what you want to do, just keep doing it. You know, you can do it. Right. And like, I haven't gotten another, I don't really support, like maybe I'll get a gig somewhere every once in a while, but for the most part, I support myself through my work.
Sure.
But I do live very frugally, you know, it's true.
Yeah. And so just to take this analysis a little further, you know, the concept, the umbrella of at least where we're going to get started, is to talk about how does one, as a person with radical politics or radical ideas, how does one advertise that aspect of themselves? And so the thing that's really striking about your particular set of choices is that what you're doing is more or less not unpopular, it's again incomprehensible, you know, almost in the Cthulian sense. And so the fact is that you're basically demonstrating an advertisement for a radical set of values with the most unattractive approach possible. And I'm right. Just sort of curious to hear like has it been successful on the level of propaganda at all?
I mean, at the most basic sense, I think that the indecipherability that you mention is something that I am very interested in, and feel happy about. In the most basic sense of like, people see this thing and they're like, "What the hell is that thing? I have no context for this thing.
Yeah.
This must be totally different. Maybe my community could be totally different, right? Like maybe like if this thing can exist, it's totally different that I have no context for. Like maybe." And I think like it's important to like to do this thing that like seems very jarring, but at the same time is very beautiful and sort of seductive and charming and nice. And so it's like, wow, this is like, I can't write this off as just like I think there are certain things to do that I try to do to make it harder to write it off as sort of just like a crazy person, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I definitely get written off as a crazy person a lot, but I don't know. I mean, it is interesting. I mean, I think at this point. I mean, there are, it's a wager, I think, between, there's always this wager between like trying to be as effective as you can be and like actually trying to have a good life, like trying to change the world and trying to have a good life. And I think that's, you know, that's really at the root of that, but I don't know. It's been strange to. I think I was a more active, like, anarchist organizer, actually, like, in terms of being involved with more other projects that could dovetail with this stuff before I moved to New York City. I found New York City to be particularly cliquey and cynical and sort of cutthroat in terms of just in terms of, I guess, altruism, but also people's just like people, nice people being involved. Like increasingly, I find activists to be just like really difficult and painful to be around, and really sort of prone to conflict and ego. New York City is already so egotistical, but
yeah. I mean, this is true of all three of the big anarchist populations in North America.
Sure. Well, of course.
Incredible cliqueness. You can tell whether Chicago is a big or a small scene based on how much fighting they're doing in terms of number
four. I think, and it's, yeah, I really, a part of me really does think that we really have to find a new way to deal with conflict and accountability and everything, because the systems that we have in the radical community are really critically failing the survivors and the perpetrators and everyone. It's just like that's another issue.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, obviously, because I live in Berkeley, we're seeing it firsthand right now.
Yeah.
So how did you become the person that started doing this? In other words, what prepared you both on the performance art perspective and from the, you know, having the cojones,
Well, I think there's a couple things going on. I mean, I think in the most basic sense, I think I always knew that I was sort of very, as a child, I looked around the world and felt that it was very homogenous, and I was sort of upset by what I saw in the world and wanted to see a greater degree of difference. And I can think about just like as a kid being like, why do all the cars look the same? Like, why does everyone have sort of similar lifestyles? Like, this is not, like, I want something different. And I think that paired with a kind of like, just sort of, I guess you could call it a desire to have a good life, but also sort of like a desire to be, to, I don't know, like FOMO about legendary stuff. There's, I don't know if you, I can, there's a train going by, if that's you picking that up. Authentic New York City noises happening.
Yes, for
the
real.
I like looking at the, yeah, you look at the subway map over in the Bay, and you guys are just, compared to the subway in New York, it's, man, hopefully that doesn't to say anything about how you guys think over there. We're really rhizomatic in New York.
Sure.
No, I don't need to do that. I always did things outside. I always was interested, but that's also why I live in New York, is because there's a pedestrian
culture
here, and it's one of the only places. I used to live in New Orleans, but it's sort of less that way, I think, now. More difficult to do street work in New Orleans, but you know, people walk around, and I can do stuff here, and there's a kind of civic culture in terms of street level civic culture that's really special in New York, and a kind of intellectual respect. But and the garbage is really wonderful, and the subway system is really wonderful, but there's also this sense of sort of like doing something difficult, right? So I think it's related to this. I mean, when I was 19, I made a list of all the things I wanted to do, and I was in college, and I was worried that I was never gonna like have an adventure or like live an adventurous life, really. And I'd done some things before then, but I made a list of all the things I wanted to do, this sort of stupid bucket list idea, and I looked at it and I was like, how can I do all these things at once? Like, how can I get done most of these things? And I realized that if I hitchhiked from Seattle to Patagonia, I could get done over half of these things. And so I did that. I didn't really bring money, and I learned to play the harmonica on the way to make money. And I think I sort of, these kind of sort of epic, sort of durational, like I can make all my money doing puppet shows on the subway about like pretentious, like ivory tower philosophy. And like, yeah, you know, that's like I was like, how far can I push like doing this improbable thing? And I think, I mean, you'd mentioned you wanted to talk about privilege, and I think that sort of dovetails, segues into that. In terms of like there definitely is an aspect to those things. It's like, oh, like you're a pretty white kid. Like of course you can, you know, do that. I think it's always a thing to weigh, like how much is sort of how much are you pushing the envelope for everyone, and how much are you just sort of cementing your all the privileges that you have and cementing, you know, this idea that like, well, like if a person of color did that, like they would get arrested immediately. And like, you know, I think insofar as like, you know, like I do sue the cops when I get arrested. I hope that can set precedent for other people to be able to do that. And do work with organizations that way. But I, you know, I think that's an important consideration. But I think in terms of my personal engagement with that kind of stuff, I think it does come down to a certain critique of homogeneity, which I don't want to describe as a survival, like this, like, because I do think I'm against survival. I think survival is really a survival for its own sake is unlike Dadaism is really depressing. It's really like, no, God, you just want to survive. Okay. I'm not there.
Well, I mean, I guess, you know, so on the one level, we can describe your performance piece as like in the ways that you already have, right, as a anarcho-nihilist philosophical performance piece. But there's some content to what it is that you're trying to do. In other words, that's like a summary document.
Sure.
What would you say is the best of the content? Like, in other words, you're talking about survival, and you're obviously representing what survival looks like vis-a-vis ecstasy or the mundanity of the people walking by you. But I guess, does anybody ever get that?
I think so. I mean, I do think so. I mean, I think in a sense I've constructed my life with sort of maximum free time, so I really can spend my time pursuing what I want to pursue. And there have been some trade-offs for that, of course. But are you talking about, would you like for me to describe sort of the particular projects or like ideological undertones thereof?
I mean, I recognize that there have to, you know, I can't follow your stuff because we live on the opposite sides of the country all that much.
Yeah.
So I recognize that you've had different phases and different sort of transitions.
Yeah.
So,
well,
yeah, sure. Talk about
that. I mean, one thing that I do that I'm proud of that I've done several times, I do usually several times this summer, I've been doing it for a couple of years here, is I build this giant shopping cart that's like this sort of towering, trundling heap of sort of vegetable grotesquerie almost, and I push it from Bed-Stuy up to the Bronx, so up through Brooklyn, over the Manhattan Bridge, usually down to the bottom of Manhattan, and then all the way up Broadway, just like 30 miles about, like to the Bronx. And it's originally, it was sort of this homage to this guy William Pope L, who he's self-described as at one point as the friendliest black artist in America, and he used to do this thing where he would dress like Superman and crawl on his belly the length of Broadway, and he did it over 5 years, and it was like a sort of, he did it a few blocks at a time. But wow. I would do that and tell people about him as I pushed the cart. But I think, I mean, again, I mean, there's a lot of ways to read the cart. You know, I do like to leave it open, but in a sort of basic sort of sense, I mean, these things that are sort of like totally entrenched in alterity and like this sort of like, oh my God, like you did this thing, like that's so weird, like that's so, why would you do that? I hope that at the most basic level that it can open up an imaginative space for like, wow, like that's really different. Like, why? What would lead someone to do that? That's like you really can do a lot of different things and sort of open up this imaginative space for difference in the world in the most basic sort of cosmological. You can really do what you want kind of way. Like, you don't have to get a house in the suburbs kind of way.
And I think the constraints are large here. I mean, in your case, you know, you basically live in a garage in, you know, in the shit ass of Brooklyn, right?
Sure. Well, I mean, I don't know. I want to say that, I think it's, I mean, I actually think I have a pretty great life, and I'm actually very, very happy with my life. And there definitely are some times when I'm like, man, like I wish I had something that I don't have. But again, I mean, things are changing in my life. Like I definitely am, you know, I'm interested in change, I think, fundamentally. And that includes things for my life. But, I mean, I don't know. Oh, fuck. Did it? We're still connected.
Yeah, we're doing great. Actually, just to change the topic a little bit.
Yeah.
So I, like a lot of other people who work shit jobs, try very hard to keep the thing I do for my job, like in other words, to pay my bills, very separate, like hard wall between my job and my life, the things I value, the anarchism I do. And you actually don't keep those lives separate.
Well, it's interesting because on the one hand, there's this sort of banal, irritating slogan people say, art is life, life is art. And yeah, I really detest that. I really disagree with that. But ironically, I do, in a sense, embody that. And I do have made some kind of fusion. That's true, but it also is, you know, it's nice to be able to present that I also am a, you know, it's nice to just do straight drag sometimes and sort of not wear skimpy tights and bras and just put on a button up and go to a cafe and be really regular, you know. But I mean, there are a lot of ways my life is really, really normal. But there's obviously probably more ways my life is really strange.
Well, so about 6 months ago, I think that you were having a lease end and you were plausibly going to have to change some things in your life. And I had suspected that you were possibly going to leave New York or that you were at least contemplating it.
Yeah, a lot of people. Yeah, That was a hard time. I mean, there was some hard stuff going on. I think New York is where I live. It's really, there's something really special about New York, and I think this is where I belong, and I'm always going to be coming back here. But I do tour a lot. I mean, I do go out for a second. I was actually back in Seattle taking care of my family for a little while, but I did try to sort of go really hard with the cart for a couple of weeks, and I built a new cart and was sort of. The project was called Portal into the Void, I sort of appropriately, but and I was here comes another train. Mm-hmm. I was just pushing this cart all around the city, collecting all this garbage I found and making stuff out of it and installing different sculptures all around and taping up weird pornos on the streets. And I guess not necessarily actual pornos, but yeah, after about 2 or 3 weeks of that, the city just took my cart and destroyed it. I think I had 80 liters. I think I had my whole, my body weight in my urine in another cart that I was dragging behind me. And in front of me, I had my, that was the whole urine thing. I sort of detailed that on my blog. That actually came from when I was squatting in New Orleans, we developed our koala house, had a whole microeconomy of my urine. I was my squat mate Amarik said, Kailan, he will be the koala house dairy, and the dairy will produce the liquid currency for which we will use the economy. And after the squat got bulldozed, I sometimes would try to keep the economy bolstered with producing some dairy products. But yeah, that's sort of esoteric at best.
Yeah. So. After the, you seem like your spirits were down after your cart was was destroyed by the city, but
there were a lot of things going on. Yeah, there was some sort of interpersonal betrayal that happened, and different, just sort of the shit hit the fan in a big way. And yeah, I was sort of shit out of luck for a second.
I mean, I guess to put the question a different way, you've chosen a life where this is going to be what your life is forever.
Maybe. I actually, one thing I've been thinking of recently, I've got a lot of projects on the horizon, but a little further out, I'd actually really like to get a step van and convert it into a kind of sort of like RV sort of slash like touring. I imagine do you know the 100 Years of Solitude by Gabriel Garcia Marquez? You read this?
I think I've heard of it.
There are these people who are described as these gypsies who appear every year and bring these sort of fantastic, strange objects to the little village of Macondo. And I imagine some sort of fusion of the Freedom Riders and these Macondo gypsies sort of touring. I really want to sort of tour Red America with this. With this, I think it would be, it could be cool to do. But I mean, like I say, I'm interested in change. You know, I am. Like there are things that I'm, you know, I'm done with. You know, like there was when I hitchhiked from Seattle to Argentina, I was on this tip of like really dogmatically like, no, there shall be no flying. But it really is. I basically live like one of these hardcore freegan people that like thinks that consumerism is wrong. But the whole analysis of consumer politics as a seat of change is, as everyone knows, sort of really just about a guilt trip for people, and it's really just a way to, just a bad place to spend your energy. Like, if you really care about making political changes, like you should do much more spectacular things, I think.
Ah, okay. Well, let's talk about that a little bit. What do you think are the two things that you've done in your own practice that has looked like the kind of change you'd like to see in the world, or are you putting that idea into practice? Because obviously, again, living in Berkeley, it appears that the anarchists and anti-authoritarians think that fighting Nazis on the streets is the spectacular way to demonstrate our good ideas.
If I'm going to be really cynical, I want to make the... I posted a thing about something that happened in New York a few months ago that was just super normal, but it's just regular. Also, like, just this, like, is Antifa just like sort of like the anarchist bro like analog to Catholic crusades? Like, is it just anarchism's response to using young male energy to this is a good way to make young like anarchist dude bros not beat up the girl anarchists, like, let's take out their but it's like after the fucking protest, like, Mielus's book sales shot through the roof. Like, that's, I mean, it's like, sure. let's look at the actual practical effects of these things.
If you ask them, a lot of Antifa describe themselves as the basically internet nerds who spend the bulk of their time doing research and then sort of deploying their troops after the fact. Like, for instance, today the entire conversation is about naming the names of who did the bad things on tape.
I'd love to see an Antifa action that was just razor precise and had a really great effect, but I haven't seen it yet. I mean, it's the truth, you know, and most, I don't know, I think, who was it? It was some, I want to say it was some person at this talk about there's all this hullabaloo in New York about the Whitney Biennial showing this sort of glib painting by Dana Schutz about the Emmett Till, the photograph of Emmett Till, and this woman was saying that she feels like it's the sort of white academy's response to is like trying to shut down free speech, and it is like there's something that doesn't work about that response. There's something that is also this freedom of speech is sort of a weird basic. It's just sort of a weird basic assertion for any society, in a lot of ways. I mean, it is curious to like at what point does freedom of speech balance with just oppressing other people and entrenching oppression? I don't know.
Anyways, we were talking about spectacular things that actually you appreciate.
Sorry, I in a certain sense. My puppet show is really that. I mean, it's something I'm really happy with in terms of like at a certain point I was like, what would I want to see in the world? And I was like, well, I'd want to see a fucked up puppet show made out of dead animals and garbage, just like illustrating Benjaminian theories of translation and Gloria Anzaldúa's talking about borders and all this stuff. And you know, this weird cart roving around the city, people sort of living in the cracks of a non sort of a fragmentary economy.
Do you take Do you take a stand against electronic recording and transmission of your puppet shows? Because obviously, I'm sure that you've been approached by other aspiring artists who would like to convert your stuff to film or whatever.
Sure, yeah. I feel complicated about it. I have a manifesto against photography specifically. I'm more against photography than I am against film, actually. I've got some film that's interesting. My principal declaration against photography is that it's fundamentally incarceratory. Like it tries to take something and suck the life out of a moving image and freeze it forever in time, which is it's something that I use, but it's as a street worker, it's something that, you know, is weird in terms of people say objectification, and I don't have anything against objects, but I do think that there's a constant perennial problem where people will come up and laugh and take a picture of me and then just really treat me like shit, and like if someone takes a picture of me and then treats me with respect and maybe gives me a buck or writes me their contact and is like, hey, I'll send you the picture if you want it. That's fine. You know, that's great. But there definitely is a way. I don't think the tool is necessarily loaded one way or the other, but I do think that there's a lot of ways to use technology and photography that do entrench power dynamics and cement these sort of fucked up minors.
And what have been, you know, again, like I'm just really looking for stories. I mean, and you just must have a thousand of them because you're literally interacting with strangers with crazy ass ideas all the time. So what's been what have been some great responses of people who have come and just seen your thing and been like, I'm on board, you know, where's the newsletter?
Yeah, I mean, it runs the gamut. I mean, I can transfix 100 people in the subway. I can hypnotize, you know, people with what I do. But I also periodically just get attacked, and people will just, you know, attack me and sort of trample my stuff and kick me. And some people will sort of come up and make out with me. But cops here are actually really interesting, too. The New York City cops are actually... I think they're the most intellectual police department. They're really
Jesus Christ.
Oh yeah, you can. But last time I got arrested, actually just a month ago, we started talking about Hegel and surrealism and André Breton, and one of them sent me his thesis on nuclear proliferation.
What the fuck?
No, that's man, the, they're yeah. Cops are interesting. I mean,
what's
all the cops
about that,
know me in New York.
Right. I mean, the New York City Police, for people who don't know, is the largest police force in the world.
It's actually the eighth largest. It's like the seventh largest army in the world.
Yeah. And what is it, 20,000? Even more?
I don't know. I couldn't quote the numbers right now.
But even the ticket people are cops. So it's like it's just armies and armies of departments.
It's weird. It's a weird. You might like this story. There's a couple. This happened several times actually. After I got arrested, I was standing outside the subway, and I have a little patch that says "Fuck the police" with a smiley face on it. And this happened a couple times where recently I was trying to get into the subway and didn't have enough money. I was trying to get money in my card, whatever. And there were three cops and my back was to them, and they saw the "fuck the police" patch. I turned around and they saw them kind of snickering at it. And I was like, "Hey guys, how's it going?" That's not right. One of them comes up to me after seeing the "fuck the police" patch. And this was around Christmas time. And he was like, "Hey, you want a candy cane?" And I was like, "Sure, of course, I'd love a candy cane. Do you guys want to see a puppet show?" And they were like, no. And I did a little tiny puppet show for them, and they loved the puppet show and were like, "Hey, can we let you into the subway? We'll let you into the subway." And they let me into the subway after seeing this "fuck the police" patch. And another time, there was this guy, I was standing outside the subway again, sort of stranded and was trying to get money in my card, and this cop saw my hat and he was like, "Hey, weren't you arrested by the MTA? Like, that's so fucked up. I saw your video of your arrest. That was heinous. I'm so sorry. Can I let you into the subway?" But it's just funny, you know, it's weird. I mean, it's a weird, like, it's weird to have conversations with cops where you're like, yeah, I really hate what you do. I think you should get a new job. You guys are so intellectual. You should become poets. And they're like, yeah, maybe I should. I don't know, the NYPD is actually really on board with hating the cops.
Sure.
But I don't know, fuck the police or whatever.
Well, again, it's also, you know, you have 20,000 people and there's going to be a range of opinions. And
well,
if anyone's going to know why you would say fuck the cops, it's going to be people in a huge bureaucracy like that.
Yeah. And if there's anything cops hate, it's paperwork. So if you threaten them with paperwork, yeah.
Yeah, there is this weird attitude, you know, that's very different to West Coast cops versus East Coast cops in that, you know, East Coast cops are a member of this huge bureaucracy, whereas West Coast cops are sort of overworked in this different sense, where, you know, they're supposed to be lifestyle cool at the same time that there aren't enough of them to do this sort of bureaucratic thing.
Yeah, right, whatever. Interesting.
I mean, in the East Bay, we have this thing that's called mutual aid between the different police departments. Yes, literally.
Really?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
And it's basically the, you know, anytime a thing like Berkeley happens, the Berkeley PD basically fires up the mutual aid, you know, fireworks or something, and the cops come from all the different surrounding cities.
Sure. Wow.
Yeah, it's in Occupy, it was a real big deal. I mean, obviously, these weird clashes happening in Berkeley are a little different, but yeah.
That's nuts.
And so you say you're transitioning. You're moving a little bit away from street performing.
Well, I'm moving away from doing the puppet show as like working that job as like a 40-hour-a-week job. I actually you might like the what I did was I used to get really mad when people gave me pennies on the subway.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, you think I'm worth a fucking penny? But so I was like, how can I make these pennies valuable? And so I was like, I'll collect all the pennies from my birth year that I get busking, and then when I get 100 of them, when I get a dollar worth, I'll melt them down into a nugget to fight the cops, and I'll stop doing street performance as my main thing. It took several years for me to actually collect that many pennies from my birth year, and I have a, sort of my birth year is one of the rarer years for pennies, incidentally, but. It turns out that it's actually hard to melt them. Like there's some combination of zinc. They're like 98.7% zinc or something now after 82, and I couldn't find anyone to melt them. And when I went to tour Europe like last summer, I flew to Norway. I flew to Norway and when I showed up at the squat in Oslo, and my first day at the squad in Oslo, I was like, I sort of mentioned this project. Someone's like, oh, I'm a metal worker. And I was like, oh, you might like this project, you know. And I actually brought these pennies with me. And the person was like, yeah, totally. There's this guy down the street who actually, you should go to him tomorrow morning. And so I went and I actually was able to melt down this nugget of sort of this weird dowsing nugget. Of 100 pennies. That's my sort of marker. They're like, I'm done with doing the puppet show on that. I try to do it like once every week or two still, because it's something that I can do really well, and I don't want to lose it, and I think it's valuable for the world, and I want it to be something in the world. But I do gigs around, and I'm working on bigger projects. Right? I'm working on I'm going to be starting a film really soon. I'm going to be, I think this month I'm going to start this project. I'm trying to do a performance on every subway stop in New York, of which there's 469. And so I'm going to start with the L train and do like a different performance on each subway, and not the puppet show. Like I'll do little puppet shows, but not sort of the one that I'm known for. And I'm going to be making this documentary from the future, I think. But I don't need to talk about all these things. But yeah, I'm sort of dedicating my time to like bigger projects. I feel like the puppet show has sort of run its course sort of, and I'm sort of doing sort of longer term planning, investing more time in projects that have like a longer term, less sort of what do you say, like direct immediate satisfaction, whatever it's called.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, clearly as someone who has a variety of projects going on at once, some of which are really quick turnaround, right? I'm now doing a weekly podcast, you know, projects like this that I'm trying to do about two a month, and then you know, some book projects that are going to be like one a year for the next 5 years is my current plan, and sort of trying to keep all your creative stuff and, you know, as balls in the air while you try to survive.
Yeah, it is an interesting juggling act, and someone was saying recently that actually that's actually a much better way to go than to sort of dedicate your entire life to one project at a time, which can end up with these sort of like real serious depressive bouts, sort of postpartum things. But it's interesting to notice things coming together also. I mean, as I work on a lot of different things at once, and I just put out this sort of morphology of Zoss. I sent you one. It's like a utopic vision of hell with sort of anarchist dialectics and hentai tentacle geography. It's sort of this Codex Serfianus meets the Necronomicon sort of book. But I've realized that it's sort of a graphic novel / sort of anti-philosophy praxis thing.
But it's all of this in a very tight little package.
Yeah, and it's perpetually growing. It keeps on growing, but it's kind of dovetailing with more and more of my other work, and it's interesting to notice things really coming together. And I think you do that too. I think in a really cool way. That's really there's something too. Like if you really just keep doing it, just keep working, yes, you can get somewhere.
That's for sure true.
Yeah, and I think I don't know, like the puppet shows, like I'm talking about sort of collaborating with some sex workers who I know with puppet shows where like they'll be doing their like sort of like cam internet stuff, and I'll be doing like weird puppet shows around them, which I think could be a kind of cool hack to like go into the world of like live Jasmine or whatever it is to,
We're actually running out of time. I try to keep these to an hour. Not
because
I couldn't talk totally more, but just so that there's a constraint. So a lot of what we're talking about is your individual approach to a sort of political / experiential life. Yeah. Have you had much success in collaboration with other people?
Yeah, I love collaborating with people. I have a lot of collaborations really running at once. And I think a problem that I have in my personality is that I can be sort of scattered, like ADHD in terms of my attention. And it's something that I am working on. But I've had a lot of collaborations. I mean, some of them in the last, so recently I've had some sort of explosions with sort of sad sort of collaborations not working out, but I do love collaborating. I'm working on some bigger collaborations that'll be coming up at the Anarchist Book Fair, Anarchist Art Fair. We'll be doing a big collaboration with several different people from different groups that we like to do sort of noise things on the subway. One thing, if we're running out of time, I do want to say that in terms of one sort of central thing, and this I started going to therapy recently. This came up in therapy, that I used to say that I'm like I'll call myself a street physicist, but one thing that I'm trying to do is like rip little holes in reality to bore these little holes in reality, but the making these boring little holes was another sort of like sad sort of way to talk about that. But I realized that when Trump got elected, that unfortunately he really beat me to the chase and really ripped a much bigger hole in reality than I was able to with like pushing around strange objects.
Well, it's one of the advantages of having enormous resources at play.
I guess so.
I mean, yeah, you know, I think about this all the time on the level of like, I would like to have a bigger impact, but I just don't know how to do it at the level that I'm at without having bigger resources.
Well, and I think that there's something, I mean, collab, there is something really, what's the word, that where the sum of the total is more, the sum of the parts, sum is more than the, synchronicity or whatever, I don't know, of collaboration, where really, really collectives can get things done that are really special, that are beyond the scope of an individual in it. And I don't know, I'd like to talk to you about collaborations in the future and different people, you know, but it is, I think we have to undertake these things with a understanding of how we're going to deal with conflict if conflict should arise, because I think that often people enter into collaborations without sort of being like, oh, this will be great. And then, you know, more often than not, there's a conflict. And if we don't have a strategy for dealing with that, sort of insured, it can really be bad.
Yeah, it's funny. One of the reasons I was sort of pushing you in a certain direction earlier in this conversation was because you're not more popular than you are because your tastes are really fucking weird. Whereas a lot of the reason why a lot of the work that I do isn't more popular is because I'm fundamentally a contrarian. And I don't like the feeling of being in a room with people who I agree with. So I fuck shit up.
I mean, I'm that way too. When I meet someone, when someone's like, oh, I'm an anarchist, I'm like, oh, like I don't want to hang out with you. Or like, yeah. Or if they're like, oh, I'm a puppeteer, I'm like, oh, you must be a pervert. That sucks. Like, sorry. You know, like it definitely, there are things about when people identify as my identity, I definitely tend to.
Yeah.
There are things I shy away from about that.
The thing I always like to say about anarchists is it means that we might have a shared vocabulary when I meet a new one. We might have some great things in common, but we might actually be totally opposed to each other on some things that are really fundamental
sure.
for me.
Yeah.
And that's a great thing about how anarchism has grown and changed, but it definitely, you know, leads one to think that, like, identities, especially self-defined ones, are not sure. stable places.
Well, I'm in some of these threads with people, a bunch of different anarchists, where sometimes someone will put up a picture of, like, we'll be doing something regular, and someone will put up some riot porn picture of some black bloc throwing a Molotov, and everyone else in the thread is like, cool, bro, awesome, yeah, love that, looks good, looking good.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh my god, oh my god. Oh my god, someone put up a cat video. Like, I just want to see a cat video.
You're one of the organizers at the New York City Book Fair this year.
Yeah, I am. Yeah, I made one of the flyers that'll be up.
And what's the date on that?
So it's the weekend of the book fair itself is May 13th, and the art fair is May 12th at Judson Church. Yeah, and the music night after that is the 14th. We're having a fundraiser though on the 28th at Mayday Space, and y'all should come. There's going to be, you know, I'll be performing. There'll be several musical acts, it's at Mayday Space in Brooklyn on April 28th.
Okay, well, so we'll try to get this out in time for that.
So yeah, that'd be great. That'd be great if you can plug it. Yeah, and if I guess I want to, I don't know if people are interested, you know, send me a note. enormousface.com. My enormous face Instagram is a little bit more current. I update it less frequently, or I update my website less frequently. But yeah, send me all your hate mail.
Fantastic. It was very nice talking to you.
Yeah, likewise. Let's. Yeah. Thanks so much for having me on the show. It's an honor.